Chapter 43. But, darling, you haven't been given a real uniform. You look so drab. Candy, who was watching him dress from the double bed, held very definite views on what constituted a real uniform. It had gold lace and frogging with, say, a star of the garter on a rich scarlet ground. Look at those buttons. They're not even shiny. Boers like shiny things. Makes for good shooting in the sun. Sean glanced over his shoulder at her. Her hair was fluffed into golden disorder, and the blue gown was arranged to provoke rather than conceal. Hastily, Sean returned his eyes to his own reflection in the full-length mirror, and brushed the hair back along his temples. A touch of grey in it now. Quite dignified, he decided. Pity about the nose. He took it between his fingers and straightened it. A hell of a nose. But when he released his grip, it returned immediately to a half-cock position. "Well, I'll be leaving you now," he said. And she stood up quickly, and the laughter was gone from her lips. They trembled a little. "I'll come down with you," she rearranged the gown quickly.
"No."
"Yes, I have a farewell present for you." In the hotel yard, hitched behind four fat mules, was a Scotch cart. She led him to it and lifted the tarpaulin cover. "A few things I thought you might need." Against the cold she had provided a sheepskin coat, six fine woollen blankets and a silk eiderdown, two feather pillows and a mattress, a case of Courvoisier brandy and a case of Veuve Clicquot champagne. Against starvation there was potted salmon, strawberry jam, caviar in little glass jars, tinned delicacies all carefully packed in wooden boxes. For his health, a medicine chest complete with a set of surgical instruments. Against the Boer, there was a Toledo steel sabre in a leather scabbard, worked with silver, and a matched pair of Colt revolvers in a mahogany presentation case.
"Candy," Sean stumbled. I don't know what to say."
She smiled a little and took his arm, hugging it.
"There's something else, too."
She nodded to one of the grooms, who disappeared into the stables and led out a full-blooded Arab stallion with an English hunting saddle on its back.
"My God!" exclaimed Sean,
and the stallion danced sideways so that the early sun glowed on the sheen of its coat. It flared the great pink pits of its nostrils and rolled its eyes before rearing high and dragging the groom off his feet.
"Candy, my dear," Sean repeated.
"Goodbye, Sean."
She lifted her lips for his kiss, and then broke away and almost ran back to the hotel. While Saul shouted ribald encouragement, Imbijani and the groom held its head. Sean mounted the stallion. Then they turned it loose, and Sean fought to quieten it. At last he brought it under a semblance of control, and crabbing and prancing with arched neck and dainty high-stepping gait, persuaded it to head off in the general direction of Johannesburg Railway Station. Eccles watched his approach impassively.
"What the hell are you laughing at, Sergeant Major?"
"I wasn't laughing, sir."
Sean dismounted, and with relief gave the stallion into the care of two of his troopers.
"Nice bit of horse flesh, sir."
"What do you think he'll fetch?"
"You're going to sell him, sir?"
Eccles could not hide his relief.
"You're damn right I am. But it's a gift, so no sale here in Johannesburg." "Well, Colonel Jordan at Charleston is usually in the market for a good nag. I should be able to get you a price, sir. We'll see what we can do."
Colonel Jordan purchased not only the stallion, but the pistols and the sabre as well. The secretary of the Charlestown Garrison Officers' Mess frothed at the mouth with excitement when Eccles drew back the tarpaulin cover from the Scotch cart. When Sean's column rode out into the brown, open winter grassland towards the jagged line of the Drakensberg, the little Scotch cart trotted behind, with the Maxims and a dozen ammunition cases, making a full load.